Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Stock market, wealth, personal finance, value stocks. Invest in your life.
Welcome to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. We're about to get to our interview. Joe Saul-Sehy is interviewing Johnny Gabriel about business. But before we get there, are you looking for a better way to invest through the market turmoil? Consider Betterment. Betterment is a robo-advisor that uses modern portfolio theory to help you manage your portfolio and reach your financial goals. With Betterment, you don't have to worry about what the market is doing on a day-to-day basis. Instead, use the stock market to help consistently build wealth. For more information, visit moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. I use Betterment to manage my own retirement fund and my travel fund, but that doesn't mean it's right for you. Do your research and then head on over to moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment. And now, here's the man himself, Joe Saul-Sehy.
Hey, Miranda, how's it going?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. And I'm happy because a lot of people out there, when they look at their budget, they think, you know what? Maybe this isn't a budget problem. Maybe this is an income problem. People like you and I have seen lots of people start businesses that go nowhere. So today I'm very happy to be talking to Johnny Gabriel. And here's my conversation with him. And we're so happy we finally got him on the show, a guy we've known for, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 years, Johnny Gabriel. How are you, man?
Great. How's it going, Joe?
Good. So you had a company, very famous company with my other show, the Stacky Benjamin Show, making cat molds. That was like you getting out of working for the man and working for yourself, I think.
Yeah, that's where it all started. I started with Charlie Cat and then decided I liked helping other people start businesses better. And so that's still going. And that's kind of like a passive thing. And me and my business partner now help other people make their own Charlie Cats.
Yeah, which is funny. You and I have talked about this quite a bit, about this idea that part of the FIRE movement idea is having a side hustle, maybe working for yourself. So a lot of people, multiple streams of income is another thing. Mm-hmm. Let's go over for people the process you help people with coming up with an idea and bringing a company to market. What is step one?
Yeah, I would say step one is 100% understanding that a business is not a foregone conclusion. So if you're good at something, podcasting is a great example. If you are really good with money, if you're really good at working out, you might say, I'd be great at talking about this and having a podcast. But the first thing you got to understand is you're entering a space that already exists. And you have to say, what value am I creating? Am I going to be speaking very similarly to the people out there? We're always talking about niching down. Niching is all about finding that thing that no one else is doing or doing it in a way that reaches a different audience or a different type of person so that you actually enter the space not shouting in a room, but actually being like one of the only people that does it this way. And you every time you enter a space, you have to persuade other people to leave what they're doing and join you. And so the first thing you have to do is really carve out a space and saying, where do I create value? How am I different from everyone else that's out there? And are people willing to either switch or add me to their routine, whether that's a podcast or even if it's like you're making a product? Are people willing to buy this product? Is this different enough from what's already out there that people are going to do this versus that?
It sounds like then homework piece number one is exploring the space and actually knowing what's out there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's funny that you say that because, we see, and not just with podcasts, but with products, so many Me Too products, just somebody doing something that 50 people before them did. I play board games and people come out with these games that are just like Monopoly. And I'm like, Monopoly mm-hmm. is, I don't know how many years old. Monopoly is a bajillion years old. And somebody comes out with a brand new one this year. Really? Okay. We're going to roll a die. We're going to buy properties and yours is different. How? Yeah. That's funny.
And that might work for a couple days, a year, and then eventually enough people will come into the space and you'll see yourself dwindling.
So it seems to me then that being a fan of whatever you do is important, but then finding the quiet space, the stuff that's not being said yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, for me, the baking mold came about because my girlfriend is an avid baker and I wanted to buy her it for Christmas. I had this idea. We have cats. And I was like, it'd be so cool if she can make a cat cupcake. And I searched and searched and searched. And I thought I was going crazy. I was like, I must not be looking in the right places. And then I realized that it just didn't exist. And that's when the light bulb went off and I said, this is going to be the thing I make.
That's fantastic. I love that. So that's step one. We do a little more homework than just, I think I want to do X, and you start doing it. Well, a lot more homework than that. What is step two? Now we found that idea. We found the space where we should exist. What do we do now?
This one's a little bit of a funny one. My step two is do not skip to step five or six. Right. So if you go online and you type in how to start a business or I want to start a side hustle, you're going to get 17 different opinions from 17 different people. And half of them are going to say, oh, you have to incorporate, make an LLC, have a bank account, make a logo. I find, especially with my work with HCQ Consulting, that there are things that make you feel good, and then there are things that actually like move the needle. And so starting off the bat, creating a company, that's going to make you feel great. You're going to feel like a real big company. You're going to have a logo and business cards and letterhead, and you're going to be incorporated. But that's not going to do anything to get the business off the ground. Unless you need it for some reason, I always advise people to wait until their idea is fully formed before they spend the money or even the time to incorporate, make a bank account, all of that stuff that makes you feel like a real business.
Test the product first.
100%.
Gotcha.
Too many people run off and do the things that make them feel legitimate before they actually are legitimate.
Well, and it's funny, Johnny, because all the things you talk about, those are just unnecessary overhead early in the business. I mean, if the business goes nowhere and you spend the money on an attorney or however you get your documents for the business, you spend money on a good logo and the business mm-hmm. goes nowhere. You just flushed all that cash down the toilet that you could have spent on starting the business.
And a huge thing about side hustles or even just starting a business in general is you have to nail down what your time is worth. So someone might be listening to this and saying, well, I can just incorporate using this filing and this website, but it takes you 10 hours. And what is that 10 hours actually worth to you before you do an analysis and say, you know, I like to ask myself, how long do I have to wait in line for a gift card before I get off that line? Will you wait in line for a $100 gift card? Will you wait in line for a $50 gift card, $25 gift card for an hour? If the answer is no, then your time is worth more than $25 an hour, and spending 10 hours on something is going to cost you $250 in the long run.
So we avoid the shiny objects. What do we do after that?
This is the fun part and also the hardest part. You want to speak to your future customers. So, and your future customers are not your friends. They're not the people you went to high school with. They're not your family. They're not your significant other. These are complete strangers.
Let's talk about this, not to cut you off, Johnny, but I want to talk about those people that you say that it's not first, because I think that this part, if I know where you're going, is really important. Why don't you talk to your friends, your buddies, whatever, family members?
You might have the most brutally honest mother in the world. And at the same time, I find that they either go in two directions. Either they're going to somewhat discourage you because they don't want you to take the risk and they want to make sure that you're safe and happy and good. And so they'll paint you a gloomy picture. Or even if they give you suggestions like, oh, what if it's smaller? Or what if you did this? Or what if you talked to these people instead of those people? That's feedback, and that's valuable feedback. But they're not going to tell you the most important thing in the world, which is, I won't pay for that. I wouldn't listen to that. I wouldn't do that. The only people who are going to be that honest with you are strangers. I find that the best place to find these strangers are actually Facebook groups and Reddit.
What type of Facebook group? Well, a Facebook group for whatever it is you're making, I suppose.
Exactly. As you're doing your research to find out if the space is how crowded the space is, whatever you're going into, this is agnostic to a product, a service, a podcast. You will eventually fall upon Facebook groups. There are tons of Facebook groups for anything, and that's double for Reddit. I think Reddit is a very nice, untapped resource where there's a subreddit for every freaking topic out there.
I don't go through Reddit because I've learned the lesson by watching other people. If you already have an existing product, don't go on there talking at all about your product.
You should definitely be careful about how much you give away. But I would say I was also afraid of someone taking my idea from me. And then you have to realize once you put in the 8 months of work, you realize that like sharing an idea with someone, them going off and just doing eight months worth of work and putting money into it and all that stuff. Don't be too afraid to tell people what you're up to. You don't have to, you know, send them your schematics.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What exactly am I looking for feedback wise from these people that I don't know?
Let's use Reddit as an example. I love Reddit because they're so honest. You need to have thick skin if you're going to test an idea out on Reddit. But you're looking for the good, the bad, and the ugly. You're also keeping an eye out for silence. So if you put something out there and you don't get any response whatsoever, that's feedback. Mm-hmm. And then you're also looking for people to either, you know, giving you good feedback or negative feedback, but then you should reach out to them, private message them, or find a way to get in touch with them and ask them for more information. What didn't they like about it? What, you know, a lot of people get discouraged when they say, ah, this sucks. You have to reach out to them and say, okay, what about this isn't good for you? And if I changed it this way, then would it be good for you? Because sometimes people are very flippant and they'll be like, ah, this blows. And then when you find out, it's just one thing that if that was gone, it would be great for them.
People flipping online? What are you talking about? Do you talk same people I talk to? This is interesting because I think that you would even find that maybe you're using your product the wrong way. Like people give you ideas that you would have never thought about in a million years.
And that's another reason why you stay away from friends and family, because if you are a really good basket weaver and you want to give classes on basket weaving, your coworker who has no interest in this is not going to be able to help you. You want to go to the people who are going to be buying or viewing or somehow interacting with you in the future. And they're the ones who are going to shape your product into something that people actually want and need.
That's an exciting group right there, basket weavers. Those people are incredible. That's my favorite group when I'm trying to fall asleep. So now we've talked to people. We've probably tweaked the product because of the fact that we actually talked to who our core customer is. Now we've got this product ready to get molded. What do we do next?
Yeah. I love that you said, and now we're probably tweaking our product. I would say that that's something that is not as common as we hope it is in the industry. So yes, you 100% have to take that feedback and implement it. You can't just, you know, count all the good positive reviews and say, okay, good, we're good to go. You have to take all the negative and you have to iterate your product before you move forward.
You say, Johnny, that that people don't take it, that feedback, as much as you'd hope is in your job as a consultant. Why is that? You said people's ego gets in the way. They're in love with their own product. They're in love with their own voice. What is it?
Right. No one wants to know that their idea isn't perfect, and people tend to gravitate towards the positive reviews and ignore the negative ones. And so one thing I like to do, I mean, as someone who has his own company, part of our job is being that realistic voice. But if you're not at that stage yet, put everything into a Google Doc and then show that to one of your more skeptical friends and say, hey, read all these posts. Are you getting an overwhelming positive message like me? They will then tell you whether or not you're getting a positive or negative message, and they will also help you pinpoint, like, oh, I'm hearing a lot of people say that, you know, red isn't a really good color. So now is it, that would be a good time to bring in your confidants.
Gotcha. Okay. And then I cut you off because you were going right in a direction on what we do next.
No worries. So now you can actually put, in my opinion, the time in to make your minimal viable product. This is very much dependent on what you're working on, but this can be as nice as a beautifully designed website if you're tech savvy. If you're not tech savvy, it could literally be 4 well-written bullet points and a sketch that you drew. Something that communicates the idea, it communicates everything that it does and everything that it doesn't do. And then that you can test. Now you have something that's not just like a couple sentences, you have a fleshed out idea. For me, when I was making the cat molds, I actually 3D printed a test product so I can take pictures of it. I baked with it to show people that it would actually work and the head wouldn't pop off. But for everyone, this is different. It's just with whatever tech and finances you have available, making something that accurately communicates the idea.
Cats with heads that pop off, though, might be a fun baking mold.
I don't even want to show you the pictures I have on Amazon of what people do with these molds. Cat ice is very popular.
Cat ice?
Yeah, that's sculptures.
That is funny. That's awesome. It seems to me too, that as you're creating this minimum viable product, this is the part where I would think most people start. They just begin creating the product like before. And you've got this as the fourth thing we've talked about, but a lot of people that I've met that are entrepreneurs, they just go, hey, I got this idea. Let's make one. And then they take that product and start showing people.
And I would say that this is the biggest mistake I made. And this is something that I try to pass on to all of my clients, because I had the same mentality. I wanted something physical. Again, I wanted something that made me feel good versus something that actually moved the needle. Granted, seeing the physical product made it easier to test. I do wish I spent a minimum of 2 months before I made that prototype talking to more people, because now there are things I wish I had done differently that I learned after the fact. But guess what? The machine is made, the factory is churning out cats, and I can't change anything unless I want to incur very steep costs.
Do you test again right after this, though? I mean, now that you have a physical product to show people, do you take that back to Facebook groups, to Reddit, to whatever?
Yes, 100%. You are jumping ahead. That is next step.
I did. Of course.
You are reading my mind. So this is where it gets interesting, and this is where the rubber meets the road. So now you have something that people can physically react to, whether it's a website, a prototype, pictures, or even if it's just, like I said, a sketch and some bullet points. And this is where you need to start spending some sort of resources. It's not a lot, but this is where I learned very much how to be like a Facebook marketer. A lot of blog posts out there will recommend Google PPC, pay-per-click. And those are a little outdated because so many people are using them nowadays that they've become way too expensive. I had to pay $1 per click. And so, you know, if you want 100 people's opinions, you're paying $100. That's really steep. I recommend for anyone who's in this stage to really dive in and learn about Facebook. Instead of it just being a link, Facebook lets you put pictures up. It allows you can make a Facebook page where there's more information, but also it allows you to really target the right types of people. If you think like, oh, this is for women between 25 and 35 who live in cities, Facebook, once you learn all the buttons to click, Facebook will let you only show those advertisements to those people.
Now you're specifically targeting the people that you want.
Exactly. And what you're looking for here, you're looking for two things. On the surface level, you're looking for what types of people are engaging with your ads. So I have a client who thought that they were marketing to 25 to 35-year-old women who like to drink alcohol. And after running advertisements, you don't only show to those people. You also test side ideas. Like, what if they're a little bit older? What if it's men? What if it's like this type of person? And all of their marketing was around millennials and drinking and having fun. And then the people who clicked on our advertisements the most were actually 45 to 55-year-old women.
And
got to change your marketing a little bit. Can't speak the same language to different groups of people.
Well, it seems like, too, if you're doing two different tests, you get to A/B the effectiveness of one over the other.
Exactly. And obviously, always recommend if you're not quite sure if it's A or B or C, make a copy of your website, make a copy of your ads, change those tiny things, and show it to equal amounts of people and really dive into the data and see which ones are getting the clicks.
I know there's a bunch of people listening to this that are thinking right now, they're like, wow, this seems like a lot of work if this is just my side hustle. My feeling there, Johnny, is that if it's your side hustle, you have less time to mess around. You really need to do all this testing ahead of time to make sure it's worth the time. Because if you don't have much time, why are you just throwing stuff against the wall?
Right. And the next couple steps involve potentially getting a bank loan to make this possible. If it's a product or something that takes investment, you don't want to ask your friends and family for $10,000 unless you're pretty sure you can pay them back.
Yeah. Let's talk about that next. So you're talking about what, funding the idea, or is that actually our clear next idea, next thing?
It is, but let me back up a tiny bit.
Okay.
You're looking for who's clicking on your advertisements.
Yes.
But the most important part here is you need to create a system where they can go up until the buying process. So clicking on my advertisement is great, but that's not a purchase. That is just someone who is interested in your idea. This is where you test potential prices. This is where you test potential conversions and calls to actions. So your website or whatever you bring them to should have an ability for them to say buy now or click here to pre-order or leave your email address and I'll put you on my mailing list. And that's what you should be counting. People clicking on your advertisements is great. It means you're going in the right direction. But if they don't take that last step and click the either sign up, buy now, do this, if they don't click that, they didn't theoretically buy your product. And so setting up a website where you can track those things and understand, okay, 100 people clicked my advertisement. How many of those 100 people actually went to the buy now? Even if it's not available, even if they click it and it says, sorry, you know, we are currently out of stock or we're taking pre-orders, leave your email. You need to know how many people went from advertisement to buy now button so that you can calculate, okay, for every 100 people that come to my site, you know, I can account this many people will actually purchase. Basically, you need to calculate how much it's going to cost for you to acquire a customer. And if that cost is too high, then it might not be worthwhile. It might be the best idea in the world, but if you can only make it happen for this much money, but you can only sell it for this much money, then it's not a viable business idea.
Yeah, I'm thinking about too that it might not even be the price. It might be your call to action is bad. It might be something about your website scheme. Like it seems like you'd test all those too to see if maybe it's something else that you're saying. Maybe you've got spelling mistakes. Like I've gone to places before and then I see all kinds of spelling mistakes. And to some degree, I'm a spelling snob. And so if you're spelling a bunch of stuff wrong, I'm probably not buying from you.
Definitely don't throw in the towel after the first test. But yeah, if something goes pear-shaped the first time, definitely do a deep dive on everything that you're doing and make tweaks and make small tweaks one at a time. And eventually you'll either hit on the right language and fix those errors and then things will move smoothly, or you'll never reach that spot and eventually you'll have to, you know, rework the idea or say maybe this wasn't. I hate telling people this, but sometimes it's just not the best idea in the world.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's tough to say, but I've seen way too many products come to market where you're like, really? That made it all the way through, huh? That was the best you had. That should have never been made. I know there's no one size fits all when it comes to testing, but I know that Facebook will let you use, you know, really small numbers in terms of the amount of money you spend to test one idea versus another. Is there some type of rule of thumb of about how much money you should spend to do your tests?
Definitely no one size fits all, but I have done tests for big companies with as low as $200.
Okay, gotcha.
And it can even go as low as $50 if you're doing a small test, if you're just dipping your toes in the water to see what's happening. Something as low as $50 can also get you started.
Yeah, great. So now we've done that, and now we start up the business stuff.
Now you can make the LLC, the bank account, and all that good stuff, because now you have numbers behind your idea and you can justify. I mean, starting an LLC could cost you either $1,000 if you go with an attorney, and that's cheap, or it could cost you 15 hours, and that's not free. And so now you can justify spending that time and, you know, protecting yourself, making sure that everything is kosher on the legal end and buttoned up.
Well, and now that we're doing this, now we're starting to get into spending some serious money.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to financing your side hustle, this could be a whole nother podcast. So I definitely encourage people to head over to hcqconsulting.start, where I will be posting a lot more about this. And there's going to be a whole section about different ways of financing your business and the pros and cons that come with them.
Nice. Let's just talk about a few just on a very high level, if you don't mind. What are some of the ways for people to consider?
One of the most popular and one of my least favorites is asking friends and family for money.
Really?
So
why is that one of your least favorites?
Because it makes for a very awkward Thanksgiving dinner.
So I get that. Like, don't get me wrong, Johnny. I think if somebody asked me for money, I should say no, because I don't want to get involved with family members. But I've also heard on the other side, if I'm an entrepreneur, it's like the cheapest, most forgiving money you could ever get.
100%. And maybe this is a me thing.
Yeah.
If you feel comfortable asking your uncle and your cousins and your sisters for money, go for it. Cause you're right. It's the cheapest and easiest way to get funding. Just keep in mind that if things don't go the way you planned, you're going to have to see them at the holidays. And it all depends on your interpersonal relationships.
That is well said, sir. What are some of the other ways?
Yeah, middle of the road. I guess we could do three options. Middle of the road would be getting a bank loan. This one is good because as long as you have good credit, which if you're listening to this podcast, you should have good credit, you can get potentially a decent amount of money with very little fuss. The side effects of that are you're going to be paying interest sometimes, like anywhere between 10 and 25% interest, which you will have to pay back. If for some reason things go pear-shaped, it could affect your credit score, and you might not get as much as you need. So if this is an idea that needs $10,000 to $50,000, great, go bank loan. If this is an app that needs to be developed and you need $250,000, that's going to be a little bit harder.
Yeah, right.
And then everyone's favorite, at least in my world, is everyone is looking for investors. There are people who say, you know, they have the next Facebook or they have the next dating app, and they're looking for people to throw them $500,000 to $1 million. That's great if you can get it, because then that gives you a very large runway and you can hire a team and you can live the entrepreneur life. But finding investors it's a process. The process of going from I have an idea to here's my deck to getting an investor is starting a business all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Whole business on its own.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. And I would think, you know, the most popular way that a lot of people go is just bootstrapping it. What do you think about that one?
I love bootstrapping it. I could not recommend bootstrapping enough. It's not easy. Your growth is capped a little bit because you constantly have to reinvest what you have, and you have to work in increments and steps. But by far, it is the best way to dip your toes into something, not fully commit and have thousands of dollars outstanding with other people, whether it's a bank or family members, and just slowly growing as you go.
Yeah.
I personally love bootstrapping.
Yeah, but you're right. Like you said earlier, you're trading time for money. That's a tough thing, especially if you're in a crowded market, you're trying to get to market fast. Bootstrapping might be too slow. Good stuff here, man. And then now that we've done that, we now have our product, we have our money to make it go. Now we're at the fun part.
Yeah, now you get to launch the product. I'm not sure if it makes sense, but between there, you have to actually make the product. So if it's a service or something that's kind of intangible, then it's already made. But if you're going to make an app, then now's the part where you hire developers. If you're making a product, this is personally one of my favorite parts. Creating products is so much fun. So this is the part where you would find factories and negotiate deals and make designs. And once again, there are tons of books written on this topic. So
yeah,
that's a podcast of itself.
That's exactly what I was going to say, because the whole idea of choosing the right factory versus the wrong one can make or break a business too.
Right.
Yeah.
And so definitely recommend doing your homework there. And there are plenty of other resources to really dive into on that.
Awesome. I'd imagine even then I'm still testing. I'm still testing.
Right. Always iterating within reason, as long as you can still make changes. Like with the cat molds in particular, I'm locked in unless I want to pay for a machinist to go and like carve things out of metal for me. But if your idea is at all, like if you can't test the product, then you could at least test messaging. You can test how you call people to action. You can test images and testimonials. Always be testing. Always be iterating. Because if you're not, you're just going to go down a road where you're going to say, oh, this isn't working. It's not that it's not working. It's that you just haven't hit the right combination yet.
I think this is awesome. Investing in yourself, investing in a business. We've had guests talk about this before. I think I'm so happy you're able to walk us through these steps. Let's talk a little bit about HCQ, about your business, man. Tell us about how you guys work with customers.
Yeah, so we work with anyone from small businesses to startups to actually even political campaigns. Believe it or not, they all kind of have the same goal in mind, which is how do I create something for people and how do I make them do what I want them to do? And so for small businesses, it's about helping them either build their product and market it effectively. We do a ton of testing. And then when they're ready to launch, we do advertising and anything that we can do to get their product in front of the right people who will react the way they want them to react. Usually it's purchasing.
Sure. Right. And that's at hcqconsulting.com.
Yep. And if they head to hcqconsulting.com/start, they will see a blog post that I'm writing that covers all of this in a lot more detail.
That's fantastic. Johnny Gabriel, thanks a ton for helping us start a business today.
Thank you.
What a great interview. I feel ready to start yet another business and get another income stream going. And before I do that, I do need to put a little bit more money aside in my Betterment account. And if you have wondered if there was a way to avoid the stress of a volatile market, if you have wondered if there is a place to put all of that hard-earned cash, one way is to use Betterment. Betterment is a better way to invest using time-tested principles of modern portfolio theory. You let the robots handle it, answer a few questions about your financial goals, how much risk you can handle, and Betterment will construct a portfolio designed to help you build consistent wealth. I use Betterment to grow my retirement portfolio and even meet my short-term travel goals. That doesn't mean it's right for you, so do your research at moneytreepodcast.com/Betterment to figure out if it's the right move. And now we're going to go back to Joe, and we're going to get into the panel portion of our show.
I love this idea of investing in a business, because often we talk about different investments on the show, but investing in yourself and your ability to make more money, I think, is an important investment on its own. And four people who have done that are the four people here in this group. So let's introduce the other three. We'll start off with the woman you just heard. Instead of talking about winter is coming, she's talking about how winter's already here. Hello to Miranda Marquette from Planting Money Seeds.
Hey, yeah, I'm looking out my window at the snow. So winter's here.
Isn't that nice?
It is kind of nice because it's the first snowfall. So everything's kind of muffled and quiet and pretty and white. In about 2 days, it'll all be mushy and brown and disgusting. But today it's beautiful.
I always think that winter is really, really fun until January 2nd. And then everybody takes the lights down. They take all the festive decorations down and then it just sucks.
Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it.
Yeah. And somebody who doesn't have to deal with that because she's in the desert, it is my good friend, Linda P. Jones from Be Wealthy and Smart.
Hey, Joe.
So winter for you, what does that mean? 55 and sunny, 65 and sunny?
It's a little warmer than that right now, but it's so hot here in the summer that when it gets down to 70, I need a coat. Isn't that weird? That's really weird. Because I grew up in Seattle and that was never the way it was when I was up there. You know, and I still, when I go back to Seattle at 65 and I'm dying of the heat and I need air conditioning. I don't know. It's very strange.
Even in Texarkana, when people ask me what the weather's like, I tell them, well, in the winter, I have to wear a coat, but if I ever zip it, it's a really bad day. Day. And the guy that I think never has to zip his coat because he's all the way across the pond in Israel, Doug Goldstein from Goldstein on Gelt.
Yeah, man, I'm trying to think of a joke about zippering, but nothing's coming to mind. But I will tell you that those people who are enjoying the sun in the resort town of Eilat here in Israel are enjoying 75 and sunny.
The town of Eilat, are they enjoying it, Eilat?
Joe, man, that is a cross language pun. Gosh, you're good.
I bet I'm the only person who's ever done that before. Yeah. Well, let's get away from the bad dad jokes. And instead, let's talk about multiple income streams because diversifying your income. Linda, let's start with you. How important is that when you're helping somebody talk about their plan?
Well, of course, it's good to have multiple income streams. But you know, one thing that, and of course, we're talking about business here more than we're talking about investments. But one thing about investments is, do you remember back in the day when we were first learning about investments and they would talk about income streams mean that you're going to invest at a lower rate than if you invest for growth?
Right.
And I think the beautiful thing about businesses is that you can do both. You get your growth in your business, but you can also have the income stream in your business. And so I, as an investor, I always look for growth and I love the opportunity to have both. That's awesome.
Well, and you could turn on, to your point, Linda, you can turn on those spigots. Like if you're taking a lot of income from your business, you can turn that off for a while and invest it. And hopefully that reinvestment turns into faster growth. So it's kind of is like a push and pull. You know what I mean?
I do. And a lot of business owners, you know, reinvest in their business, though, more than outside their company, which, you know, if they're growing at a high rate and they are able to get a really great return, then that is probably the best place for them to invest their money. So a lot of business owners are actually, you know, pouring that money back in and expanding and growing and developing new products and new income streams.
To some degree, Doug, what Linda's saying, you must caution people against, because if you pour everything into one asset and it goes bad, there goes the future.
Yeah, Joe, I actually think that's true, but I also think that one of the important factors is what Linda was saying, what we all learned in stockbroker school or in the old days, that you either get growth or you get income. But when you look at people who are investing in the stock market, the return that you get has to be looked at in terms of both growth and income, which we call total return. And, you know, there's a huge amount of return from dividends that you get when you own stocks. And then I would say to add insult to injury, but I want to say a positive thing, but then to add to that and benefit from compound interest, people who reinvest the dividends in the stocks that they own are then benefiting from actually reinvesting in a company. So it's actually exactly the same. I was going to say it's very much like, but it really is exactly what Linda was talking about, which is people who own companies reinvest their earnings in their own company. And just like all of us own our own companies and we take money we earn and we put some of it back into the company and the rest we spend on things like, you know, Haagen-Dazs. I think that you have to realize that this is a principle in investing and growing wealth that applies across the business spectrum, not just in privately held companies, but also in publicly held stocks.
Miranda, a lot of people go into business themselves after working for somebody else. You're somebody, one of the few people I know who actually went the opposite way. You worked for yourself for a long period of time and then went and worked for somebody else. Why would you go the opposite direction?
Part of it had to do with stability. As some of you know, I was the primary breadwinner for my family during my marriage. You know, I mean, my husband still had an income. So I didn't realize after the divorce, after I moved here, after about a year of being without my ex's income, I worried, right? I mean, I still was doing fine with the freelancing. It was still going well, but I worried, right? I needed to get my son through high school. I was concerned about income stability. And I found a company that would let me work from home and let me basically do things on my own terms as long as I met my deadlines. You know, I had health insurance and a paycheck every 2 weeks. So the stability really helped. But even then, you know, and because, you know, I mean, I didn't realize the mental toll not being able to rely on my ex's income. I didn't realize the mental toll that was taking on me. You know, it took about a year for me to realize, you know, because you've got that, right? When you have that, those multiple streams of income, you know, you feel comfortable like, okay, if something happened, we'd still have this.
Yeah.
And even through that, even through the whole time I was working with Student Loan Hero and I was working on a W-2 job, I never stopped freelancing. So I still didn't want to put all of my eggs in that one basket. I wanted to add a little bit more stability to my income life and have that health insurance. I mean, now that I'm paying for my own health insurance again, I'm reminded of how soon we forget. Because I mean, I paid for my own health insurance before I worked for Student Loan Hero, and now I'm paying for it again, and how soon we forget.
Yeah.
So I never stopped freelancing because I wanted to have that income diversity. And then I also have income from my own websites. We have this podcast. So having different places to have that income really kind of helped out.
You were also in retrospect too, holding on to your freelancing allowed you, once that Student Loan Hero opportunity left, they sold the company to everybody who doesn't know what happened with Student Loan Hero, and that went away, you were able to step right back into freelancing because you had never stopped.
Exactly. Yes. Since I had kept cultivating those relationships and I was still, you know, freelancing. Yeah. I posted like a semi-dramatic thing on Facebook. Oh no, I shall have to apply for jobs. Within 2 hours, my network had been awesome and come to my rescue. And I had all sorts of leads. Now I'm sitting here going, why did I say yes to so many things? Because I have more freelance work than I really want. But I am grateful for it. And that's part of it, right? Is always be cultivating those options, always be cultivating those relationships, and always be investing in yourself and in your business, even if you think it's just a small side business or a small part of your income, because you never know when you're going to have opportunities to take it bigger.
Let's talk about that, about funding your startup businesses. I want to skip to what Johnny and I talked about at the end, Linda. When you look at all the different ways to fund a business, what are your favorite ways to get the funding?
Well, like in your interview, you guys talked about bootstrapping. I really like that method because you have to have success in order to be able to bootstrap. And he was talking all about the proven success of the idea and all along the way, making sure that you have a green light, you have people who are interested and who are wanting to buy, you have a great product, you have something different, a different niche. Although he said niche, whatever, you know, you have that proof of concept. And so I like the fact that if you bootstrap, you are all along the way getting that affirmation that people really want this product and you're able to, you know, reinvest that in the business and continue to grow.
Johnny talked about people that want to skip ahead. Doug, I'll bet when you started your business, you probably did that. I know I did it. You probably met people that did that. How bad is that to just skip ahead? Let's make a prototype and get the damn thing out there.
In my field, because I was a financial advisor, I did need to go ahead and, like, you know, print the business card thing and find an office and a place to go. But I have to say, I really didn't dive in with both feet. I went carefully, and I'm with Linda on this idea of bootstrapping. I think, listen, most businesses fail. You may have the greatest idea out there, but I mean, not listeners to our show, but, you know, in general and statistically, most of them are going to end up failing. So you may as well start with smaller amounts of money, which is what you can afford, rather than taking a loan from the bank, which, oh my gosh, that seems frightening because they're going to want their money back one day, or from family because you had the Thanksgiving problem, which you mentioned in the interview. And if you do it yourself, you'll go slow and steady. People who don't have lots and lots and lots of experience starting multiple companies and think, well, this is a great idea, I'm going to start a company, they have no idea what it means to run a company and really how difficult it is. So if you start small and you don't get an influx of $100,000 or $1 million or whatever it is, which you'll instantly blow probably because that's what people tend to do, then you'll be much more careful, especially because it's your own money.
Well, and let's take the opposite tack on this. Out of all the ways to fund a business, which one do you like the least?
Well, debt is a really bad one. But at the same time, I also think that when people bring in partners, they go, well, this guy's got a lot of money, so he'll come in and, you know, he's only taking 50%, right? Then it's not really your business anymore. And if it happens to be successful, which as I mentioned moments ago, is really unlikely. But if it happens to be successful, that partner who probably knows a lot more than you do because he's a professional investor, think of the movie about Facebook. That's what happens.
Yeah. Miranda,
except the billionaire thing. That doesn't really happen much.
Miranda, your least favorite?
actually think I'm going to have to probably agree with Doug on that, with the debt. I mean, I've used debt on occasion back in the early days of the freelancing. I had a personal line of credit that was really great for helping me smooth those times when somebody is inevitably paying late. I mean, it's going to happen mm-hmm. when you're a freelancer. Someone's going to pay late and the mortgage is still due. Although I do understand that when you're starting up, you may need that small business loan. And I don't know, I'm having a hard time. I think I'm tied with like venture capital and debt because venture capital is kind of like you're giving over part of the control to somebody else and they're going to have to be paid out. I mean, when we're talking about Student Loan Hero, they used a tiny bit of venture capital, not a lot, but a tiny bit. And when they were bought, part of the deal was, you know, a good chunk of it had to go back to the venture capitalists who wanted to return.
Oh.
So debt and venture capitalism are kind of tied there at the bottom of my thing, because both of those are ways that you are kind of giving up a certain amount of control and having a certain amount of worry involved, if that makes sense.
It does. But having open lines of credit, it sounds like, because of that mortgage situation you talked about, super important to keep as many open lines of credit as possible, I would think.
Yeah. And I think that that helps a lot in terms of, like I said, smoothing things over. If you're in a business where you have to like buy something, like buy inventory, you know, being able to do that and then have a manageable payment until you can turn around and sell, that makes sense. You know, and I kind of think of that too, you know, when I was moving here, you know, thinking of having good credit as a resource, right? You have open lines of credit as a resource if you need to turn to it. You have good credit so that you can get the apartment you want, the business space you want, the office space you want. You know, these are things that, you know, a lot of people don't think about, but that's kind of an investment too, an investment in your credit, in your financial reputation, so that you have more options available to you.
Yeah.
You know, another thing that we haven't really talked about, but a lot of people are unfortunately doing, is cashing in their 401k to start businesses.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up.
And this is a trend I've been seeing that is just really awful, because most of those people are under age 59 and a half, so they have a 10% penalty to pay. They have income tax to pay on any gains that they have in their IRA that they haven't already been taxed on. And it really is devastating, because they're, you know, taking that money that was saved for their future and, you know, basically gambling it all on today. And a lot of times that doesn't work out very well. In fact, most times it doesn't work out very well. And then they have a big tax bill too. And if they haven't planned for it, then it's a big surprise to them. And that's even worse. So I really want to discourage people from cashing in their 401k. And, you know, try to save money ahead of time before you start the business that you can invest. But I think the best way is really to do it as a side hustle. And, you know, if you can stay employed and do it as a hobby on the side, do it evenings, weekends, you know, a lot of very successful entrepreneurs have done that, have given their time and given up a lot of their TV time, their family time, other important things that they would be working on, but they're putting it into their business and it ends up paying off in the end.
I don't know how I'd feel about giving up my family time, because I've always made my family a priority, but I really like what you say about the TV time. According to the American Time Use Study, the average adult spends 2 hours of time on TV each day and an hour on the internet each day. So when you stop and think about that, that's 3 hours that you could be working on your business if you want to. Or even if you just took half that, that's an hour and a half you could be working on your business.
I think people actually spend more. I mean, I agree with you, but I think the numbers are probably far higher for how much we spend watching television. And of course, nobody wants to give up family time. But the reality is a lot of successful entrepreneurs have given up holidays and they're working quite a lot. And that has to come from somewhere. And so you do need the, you know, the family buy-in. If you have other people around that you are in a family with, that's important for you to negotiate that ahead of time with your family. But there are sacrifices that have to be made. That has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, totally agree. The last question I think I'd like to hear from everybody. We heard Johnny's, I thought they were pretty awesome list of steps to starting a business and where a lot of his clients make mistakes. But let's add to that. What's your number one piece of advice for people starting a business, Miranda?
Oh man, we're starting with me. Oh no, gosh!
You can't rip off everybody else this time.
Oh my goodness, I am so in so much trouble. No, honestly, my number one piece is to start it. so often, I mean, I know people who are like business idea after business idea after business idea, but they're waiting for this perfect moment, or they're waiting for this perfect idea, or this perfect opportunity, or they're waiting for all of the pieces to be perfectly in place, and they won't launch until it's perfect. And I don't know who said it originally, but my friend J.D. Roth from Get Rich Slowly quotes it all the time: don't let perfect be the enemy of the good. I know he cribbed it off of someplace else, but I don't know where, and I'm too lazy to look it up. So I'm just going to, whatever. Anyway, so that's kind of my thing, is to get started. And even though when I first started with the freelancing, it was a total mess. Like, I barely knew what I was doing, but I went out there and I started, and I put it out there, and I started writing, and I started making money. And it may not be the best way to figure it out after the fact, but I managed to start figuring it out in time to actually make it work better. But the important thing was to get started, because if I wanted to wait till everything was perfectly lined up and the situation was perfect and the timing was perfect and I felt perfectly great about my portfolio and I felt perfectly great about my resume and I felt perfectly great about everything, I wouldn't have started, because it's never going to be perfect and it's never going to be ideal. So if it's something you're thinking about, if you're in a position where you can at least give it a good try, I say get going on it if it's good enough.
That's why I like Johnny's idea of going through and talking to potential customers and drawing it out first, because I think it gets rid of a lot of that fear.
Right. And you can see, okay, is it good enough now? And if it's good enough, then you go for it. But you can't wait for it to be perfect. Like, it's never going to be perfect.
Yeah. Linda, your best advice for a budding entrepreneur?
My best advice is do something because you love it. You're passionate about it. You're interested in it. You enjoy spending time at it. Really do something that's connecting in to your interests. Because when you do something just for money, it really disconnects from a lot of things. And even if it becomes successful, it can be something that really feels like a weight around your neck rather than something that you're connected in with and feel happy to do and happy to be part of. So I would say, you know, make sure that you're really passionate and enjoy and love what you do, and don't just do something for money.
Yeah, we see that all the time. Where's the next buck going to come from? And people chase that. And the next thing you know, they're burnt out way early because they didn't love any of it, just the pursuit of cash.
That's exactly right. And it is easy to get burned out because you're just grinding for the money. And that's where, you know, we can be unhappy in careers too, because sometimes we got into a career for that. You know, I think nobody grew up wanting to be a lawyer, right? They got into law because they thought it was going to be good money, and then, you know, weren't very happy being lawyers in some cases. Maybe other people are very happy doing it, but, you know, many are not. And so I think it's important to really follow your passion, really follow your interests. And that's going to bring out your talents too, because that's where your strong points are. And I think that's what you should really use for your business, are your strong points.
You could watch one of those old movies like To Kill a Mockingbird and want to become a lawyer.
There are some people that, you know, they watch Perry Mason and they like to argue a case or defend people, or there's many noble, you know, efforts behind that. But I know a lot of people that got into it because they thought it would be good money, and then they're not happy. Or dentists, for example, you know, might be why the suicide rate for dentistry is so high, because they make so much money, but maybe they're not really happy with it. So it's really about following your passion, your skills that you've been given, and developing those. And I think in the end, the business helps us grow as a person. And so when you're developing your passions and your interests, you're growing as well.
Doug, your best advice for somebody thinking about starting a new business?
So I did want to give the advice about finding clients first, but I think that Johnny really dived into that well and pointed out how important it is to make sure there's someone actually willing to pull out his wallet, hand you money in return for whatever you sell. But because that point was made so well, I will give my second point, which I also think is critical. You've got to think about what you yourself are adding to the equation. In other words, why are you going to be the president of this company? What are you doing? And then once you figure out what your main addition is to this project, outsource everything else, delegate everything else away. Because if you're not focusing on the one area where you are really bringing in the most value to this company, and you're being the bookkeeper, and you're also the guy doing the design, and you're the web the web person and you're the support person and you're the podcaster and you're writing the copy, you're never going to succeed. It's simply impossible to do everything to make a business grow. So the moment you are able to stop doing everything and just do the one thing that really makes a difference in this company. And if there is nothing that you have to really add value, then you have to really consider whether this is a good idea for you.
I love that piece of advice. I'll throw mine on the top or on the bottom, whichever. I think that you have to realize that bigger isn't necessarily better. And I love the book Profit First, where you think about your profit margin first, and instead of always chasing bigger. And, you know, as I get bigger, at some point I'll make money. You want the business to work for you instead of you working for the business. And I've met way too many entrepreneurs that it ends up being an 80-hour job instead of a business, where the business really has you by the tail and you're frustrated. You're running around just thinking that someday this is going to be a great thing. Turn that equation around and always make the business work for you. And I think you're going to be a lot happier and better off. Speaking of better off, I think that we've done that. Let's make our people better off by telling them where else they can get good content at your places of business. Doug Goldstein, what's happening at, what's happening anywhere where you live?
Thanks very much, Joe. I actually just did a whole month about bonds. I had a webinar where I taught a lot that was hugely, hugely successful. And I spoke a lot about bonds on the Goldstein on Gelt show, which is my podcast. And anyone who wants to learn more about bonds should check out The Hidden Truth About Bonds, a recent episode, by going to goldsteinongelt.com, clicking on the radio show tab, and you can find that most recent episode, which also got a huge number of downloads and a lot of response. So people looking for bonds should check that out.
Nice. And Miranda, how about it? Planting money seeds?
Yeah. So actually, Doug mentioned doing that one thing. And so actually, instead of going over to plantingmoneyseeds.com, I recommend that you go to YouTube. That's a big place. But no, if you go to Eric Rosenberg's YouTube channel, he has a playlist from Ignite at Podcast Movement for 2018. And I do a presentation on outsourcing. And so if you want to figure out how to grow your business, and it's actually something I've used in my own business to grow profitability, go outsource, learn about outsourcing. I do a quick 5-minute presentation on outsourcing. So I encourage you to go and watch that. And if you can find that one thing and then outsource all the other things, then you are more likely to be able to scale up and maintain your sanity.
Awesome. And Linda, what's going on at Be Wealthy and Smart?
Well, speaking of YouTube, I started the Wealth Heiress TV channel on YouTube. So go on over, subscribe, and check that out. And I'll be doing the same millionaire tips, wealth building tips, investing tips that I do on Be Wealthy and Smart. And you'll have video too. And also the Wealth Heiress book has sold out on Amazon. We are on back order. And so if you want it for the holidays, we expect to get another shipment in. So put your name on the waiting list and you'll get it first. And what's going on with you, Joe?
Well, at the Stacky Benjamin show, part of our show is a call-in segment. And we just had this call from Nick in Alaska, apparently, who's giving a bunch of gifts to kids that he doesn't even know. He does this once a year, and his wife told him to do it. He become a legend, and now he's worried that he's over budget. So if you want to hear stuff like that, head to stackybenjamins.com every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. That's going to do it for today. Miranda, you got it from here.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. As always, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, and everywhere else fine podcasts are sold. We will deliver a free steaming episode to you every Friday morning. So make sure you check us out. Make sure you subscribe. Don't forget to also check out moneytreepodcast.com. You'll find more information about our show sponsors. You'll find information about our panelists, and you can get access to other resources and past episodes so that you can get the entire pantheon of Money Tree Investing Podcast lore. And remember, no one will take care of your money as well as you do. So invest in your life.
Thank you for listening to the Money Tree Investing Podcast. Visit us at moneytreepodcast.com for more free investing resources.